couch potatoes across the country, around the world, on the radio and on the internet. I'm Kevin Carr, and you're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies. On today's show, I'm going to be talking about the new movies Scoob, Proximity, Capone, and the Unbreakable Kimmy Schmidt movie Kimmy vs. the Reverend. I'm also going to be talking about some news and the Trailer Park and the Home Cinema Roundup featuring Curse of the Werewolf and the Do-Over. But first, if you want to get in touch with me, you can email me at fatguys@fatguysatthemovies.com. You can leave me a voicemail at 740-205-6456. That's 740-205-6456. You can find me on the internet at fatguysatthemovies.com or facebook.com/fatguysatthemovies. And if you want to reach out to me on Twitter, I'm at twitter.com/KevinCarr.
Good evening. I'm Ron Burgundy, and this is what's happening in your world tonight.
The Coen brothers are going to be developing a script for a new Scarface movie, and it's going to be directed by Luca Guadagnino. I think that's how you say his name. I have no idea. But he's the guy who did Call Me By Your Name. And of course, you look at Call Me By Your Name as this independent international love story between a graduate student and a high school student. And you think, yes, the next obvious step is a Scarface remake about the most notorious gangster in the world. I am looking forward to that one just because that intrigues me that it would make the leap from Call Me By Your Name to a Scarface remake. The next piece of news, I feel I should have an update every week, and that update would be, when are the movie theaters opening? Because that seems to change on a weekly basis. Obviously, right now, some states are opening up. A lot of states are opening up in some certain way or not. And as you know, I voiced my concerns that they're being premature by the standards set up by this own government. Everybody agrees on what the standard should be, but nobody's following them. So they're opening it up prematurely, and you're going to have this huge spike in cases in June, and it's going to mess things up. And I was reading an interesting article. It was about the science behind the disease transmission, and essentially, you know, boiling it down, it says it's a factor between proximity and time spent together. And that's the whole point of social distancing. You want to be far away from somebody. And then the purpose of wearing the mask isn't necessary to protect yourself. I mean, it gives like a 15% protection of what you breathe in, but it catches like 70% of the particles going out. So really, wearing a mask has nothing to do about you. It has to do with other people. And it's common courtesy. It's like covering your nose when you sneeze instead of just sputum all out in the world. But it's also about how long you are together. That's one of the dangers of places like bars and restaurants, because people are sitting there and talking, where the air circulates all around the room, and that is going to be a problem. I also was reading in this article, it was saying public restrooms are like the worst place because there's a lot of cells being shed in a bathroom. But that made me think of movie theaters, because I'm like, no matter how much you socially distance, you're still in a room, and it's a large room, but it's still a room where the air circulates all the way through the room. You've seen the fans on the ceiling, and you felt the air conditioning units kick on. That air gets circulated around the room, and that's going to circulate all those particles. And then, of course, even if you're socially distant from each other, people are going to be eating popcorn. How do you wear a mask and eat popcorn at the same time? And on top of it, in terms of duration, you're in that room with people for 2 hours. Now, supposedly, Warner Brothers still has Tenet on the release slate for the middle of July, and Disney has Mulan on the release slate for the end of July. And they have all those early fall releases. But here's the other problem. New York's not even close to being ready to recover from the nightmare that they faced. And the mayor of Los Angeles extended their stay-at-home order through July. So if you open in July, you won't get New York or LA. And that's like 20% of the box office really there. That's a huge chunk to just not even get. Also, if you look at the box office for Onward, it's not the last movie to be released, but it was the last big box office hit. If you go back and you look at what Onward made on its initial release, March 6th, that weekend it made almost $40 million. The next week, while everything was still open, but everyone was concerned about COVID, it made $10 million. It had a drop of 75% almost from week to week. That is massive. And it's not the number that it was on the week it opened. It's the number it was on the week before it got really bad in this country. And that, I think, is not an insignificant number to ignore. The fact that this Pixar movie that should pack the house was not able to sustain even a 50% drop. That's what you have to look forward to. This dovetails into something else that I noticed. There was a rumor that Amazon was thinking about buying AMC Theaters because AMC Theaters is nearing bankruptcy because it's been closed for so long. And of course, all the other places like Landmark and Cinemark are dealing with this as well. But AMC Theaters is the biggest theater chain in the country. And a lot of people say, well, you know, it's all just a rumor at this point. But here's the thing. Amazon can afford to buy them, and they're probably going to get a fire sale price if they're heading to bankruptcy. Now, everyone's talking about the idea of Amazon putting its own movies into there, and they can control the box office there, and they can also strike deals with getting them to the Prime service afterwards, and that's true. But I think the thing everyone's missing, what I'm not seeing people talk about, is the fact, do you realize what Amazon could do? Amazon could buy AMC, and then they can just say, you know, as good corporate citizens, we're going to keep this AMC theaters closed through the rest of the year. They can make that decision, and Amazon could absorb those prices. It's a big enough company that it could. And then where do you stand with the release of Tenet and Mulan at that point? That's a huge bargaining chip at that point. And they may just say, you know, hey, we're going to just shutter this until the end of the year just because we can, and we don't want to be known as the place that this stuff spreads. You're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. That sound means it's time to roll into the trailer park. The first one I want to hit is Space Force, which debuts on Netflix on May 29th.
Our nation's internet runs through our vulnerable space satellites. POTUS wants complete space dominance. To that end, the president is creating a new branch, Space Force, which Mark will run.
What?
This is a great adventure.
There will be setbacks, but greatness was never won without sacrifice.
How much was that prototype?
4 million?
Middle schools cost as much as 4 new middle schools.
This trailer dropped actually a couple weeks ago. I haven't had a chance to talk about it, but I thought it was an interesting one because it looks very funny. It's done by the people who did The Office, Greg Daniels, who also did Upload, and he's done this with Steve Carell. So Steve Carell's in sort of the creator position as well. And I'm looking forward to this. It looks like funny. I mean, you got Steve Carell being funny. You got Steve Carell dropping some swear words in there as well, which is not, we're not used to that with Steve Carell. This one looks interesting. I'm just wondering if they're going to be able to sustain the comedy throughout. The next one I want to hit is Unhinged, which opens on July 1st.
Having a kind of a hard time lately.
I'm sorry.
Accept my apology.
Just ignore him.
If you could just do the same, we could press reset.
I don't have anything to apologize for.
Ma'am, are you okay?
I'm pretty sure the guy in that truck's following me.
He's road raging.
I don't think you really know what a bad day is. But you're gonna find out.
What's interesting about this one is me and a whole bunch of my other colleagues of mine got this email from a publicist was like, oh, it's going to be the first movie back to theaters. It's going to welcome people back to theaters in July because it has a July 1st release date. At the end of the trailer, it talks about putting it into large format screens, which it's essentially assuming that the theaters are all going to be opening up, or at least a good chunk of them, on July 1st, and it's dropping this Russell Crowe movie in. And does this movie look good? No, it looks like a cross between Falling Down and Duel, and maybe a little bit of Changing Lanes in there as well. And God bless him, Russell Crowe, he's bigger than I am at this point. And if you watch the trailer, they frame him so that you can't see how enormously fat he has gotten, which I think is hilarious. But this one, it looks almost gimmicky that it's releasing in theaters in all of the, because they're pushing the fact that it's coming to theaters and it's going to restart the theatrical experience. And this just looks like a crappy direct-to-video that they decided to jump into that experience. So who knows? I'm not going to go to the theater to see it. That's it for this segment. I need to go to a break. When I come back, I'm going to be talking about Capone and proximity.
Hey,
welcome back to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. Let's jump into the movie reviews with Capone. The final year of Al Capone's life is profiled in this bleak melodrama.
Do you know what the difference is between Adolf Hitler and Al Capone? Hitler's dead. Capone lives like a king in Florida.
He has full-blown dementia.
I have reason to believe it could all be an elaborate act.
What's this about?
We have information that your client may have tucked away a very large sum of money.
Guys like you own this place $10 million.
He's gonna go on a rampage.
This actually opened on demand this week, so it opened on the 12th, on Tuesday of this past week. And it was one that was going to go to the theaters, and because of the coronavirus pandemic, it has pivoted to an on-demand offering. And it's directed by Josh Trank. If you don't know who that is just by name, he's got a weirdly checkered past in terms of movies. He did Chronicle, which was that found-footage superhero movie about 10 years ago or something like that, which is garbage. I hated that movie. I know a lot of people liked it, and it got a lot of praise. I thought it was absolute crap. It was not a good movie, but he kind of made a splash with that, and that gave him sort of the street cred to write his own ticket. And the next ticket he wrote was to the Fantastic Four reboot, which, do you remember that one? Yeah, no, most people don't. The Fantastic Four, we're not talking about those ones that Tim Story directed about 15 years ago. We're talking about the one with Kate Mara and Miles Teller. That one was just awful, and it was disjointed. It didn't make a whole lot of sense. And it really flopped. It was one of the biggest bombs of the sort of the superhero strain. Well, now he came back and he was going to do this Capone movie, and it had bounced around development for a while, and they got Tom Hardy to play Capone. And the story, it's just his last year of his life. And if you don't know anything about Al Capone, he was riddled with syphilis at the time, because he had apparently in his younger days worked at a brothel, and he had contracted syphilis when he was like 15. Got to remember, he had a very short life. He was put in prison in his early 30s after becoming one of the most notorious gangsters around. And then he was released, and he was basically left on his own reconnaissance at his home in Florida. And he had had a stroke, and he wasn't doing well health-wise. He was going insane because his mind was rotting from the untreated syphilis. A real gentleman. This guy was, a peach. And I don't know, I'm very conflicted with this movie, because there's certain things I thought were kind of fascinating about it. I thought it was fascinating that we got to look at a section of Al Capone's life that most people don't know about. I also think it was interesting because it makes some weird choices, because he's going insane. He's literally losing his mind. It's being rotted away from the syphilis bug. And so throughout the film, he's having these hallucinations and these dreams, and half the time you don't know if something's real or if it's not. And I mean, it's an unpleasant story, because, he's been losing control of his faculties. He's wearing a diaper. He's unable to speak in a lot of ways. He sometimes has mobility issues, and that's all because of his medical history. Not just the syphilis, but the stroke and the heart condition and everything else. But it's also kind of hard to follow at times. And that's the problem when you have a movie that people know the character, but they don't know the full story and everybody else in his life. If you're Al Capone's biographer, if you know a lot about Al Capone and his relationships, then this movie might make more sense. But it's sort of like it presumes that you should know who's who in Al Capone's life. You're just kind of dumped in there with everybody, and you have trouble sort of making all these connections. It is a bit hard to follow. And with all the, and they're not dream sequences. I'm not accusing this of having dream sequences, but it has these diversions where it has these moments of insanity in his life and in his mind. And it's relevant for what's going on. But while those are interesting, it's hard to tell what's what. So it's an interesting look at it. It's a unique expression of Al Capone, but I don't know. I mean, I'm right on the border between kind of sucks and kind of rocks on this one. I'll be nice and say kind of rocks, but boy, it's not a great movie. It's just, it's one of those that it's you're not going to see anything else like it right now.
It kind of rocks.
You're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. Let's talk a little bit about proximity. After witnessing a UFO event, a NASA scientist goes on the run from a secret government agency.
So, Isaac, can you tell us what happened that afternoon?
A meteorite with smoke trailing behind it appeared over the skies of Los Angeles yesterday.
Isaac, where you been?
You got a minute? I want to show you something.
You're saying this is real. Are you okay?
You believe me, right?
Where have you been for the last few days?
Yesterday?
Yeah, yesterday, day before.
I'm not making this up. This really happened to me.
Okay.
You've been gone from work all week.
Did you have an encounter with an extraterrestrial being?
This is released by Shout Factory, and they normally, a lot of the stuff that I cover from Shout Factory is their DVDs and Blu-rays. They do a lot of great re-releases of old movies. I'm going to be talking about one of them later in the show, Curse of the Werewolf. So, of course, Proximity is... Well, it would have been a theatrical release, but again, they're just going VOD. But it's, here's the thing. It's done, it's an independent film, and it's written and directed by Eric DeMisi, and he is best known as a special effects guy. He had worked on Stranger Things, and he'd worked on Game of Thrones and Tron Legacy, and that background can be good or bad. I remember, who was it, I forget which brothers it was who did Skyline, and that was, these were guys who worked in special effects. And they were able to do some really cool effects for a low budget and then release it in the theaters, but the movie was garbage because it wasn't very well written. That's the danger you run into when you have a special effects technician do a movie. Now, I think there's more story to this than something like Skyline. This actually has some interesting stuff. It does suffer from some poor writing here or there. There's characters that could have been developed better. They there are times they kind of put the characters together, especially it's just this one guy and then he meets somebody else, and you know, they kind of add on characters as they go through the movie. And when they finally get the main group of characters together, juggling the dialogue amongst them all doesn't quite work. You don't get it really could have used some script doctoring by somebody who knew how to flesh out the characters. So if you can handle that, and the fact that there's also the bad guy, the main bad guy from the agency who's chasing them, that guy really chews the scenery. I mean, his acting's a little bit corny and cheesy, and you get that now and then. But overall, I mean, with these flickers of sort of direct-to-video elements, otherwise, it's a really compelling film. It's a neat little sci-fi movie. They don't overdo the special effects, which is smart, because this guy seems to realize that if you have good special effects, it's more about quality than quantity. And so while they have these effects moments, it's not just wall-to-wall effects, and it makes it look really good. It also has a great look. It has a great feel. And it's a compelling speculative fiction piece. Like I said, it has some writing issues. So it's not great, but I mean, certainly for this, just this low budget, small feature that this guy put together, it's really doggone impressive. So Proximity, if you're a little sci-fi fan and you want to see something different, you want to see something new, check that out. It's out in theaters. It kind of rocks.
It kind of rocks.
That's it for this segment. I need to go to a break. When I come back, I'm going to be talking about Scoob and Kimmy versus the Reverend. Welcome back to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. Let's continue on with the movie reviews and talk about Scoob. Warner Brothers reboots the Scooby-Doo franchise with this CGI film featuring the gang from Mystery Incorporated going after Dick Dastardly in a plot to disrupt time itself.
Whoa, whoa, whoa. Shaggy and Scooby were taken?
Yeah. This blue light came down from the sky and beamed them up.
I can't breathe.
I'd have to assume that if they were with their friends, they wouldn't have been kidnapped.
Okay.
Can you skip the emotional punishment?
What was some guy want with Scooby and Shaggy?
I don't know, but I'd like to shake the hand of whoever created this.
Zoinks!
And then, you know, throw that hand in prison for trying to kill our friends.
This is obviously an animated feature. If it were in theaters, which it's not, if it were in theaters, it probably would have had a 3D release. But because of the COVID-19 crisis and pandemic, it got pivoted to VOD. It is a theatrical level release, though. It was planned for it. It was supposed to be out in theaters. Remember Trolls World Tour? It's the same deal. It's this animated film, and it's for the family. The difference is, and before I even get to the how the movie is, how it's available anywhere you can buy on-demand movies. You know, you go to Amazon, Fandango, wherever. You can buy this. It's $19.99 to rent for 48 hours. Or for an extra $5 for $24.99 or $24.95 or whatever, you can own it. You know, honestly, if you got kids, that's the better choice. Even if you hated the movie, somebody in the family is going to like it and they'll probably want to watch it a couple times. And then you got it in your movie library and it only costs you $5 more. Still, if you got a family of four and you're sitting around watching something for $25, that's cheaper than going to the theater. But it's a CGI animated film, and it's very vibrant and wonderfully animated. And that's, you expect that now. It's a Warner Brothers theatrical release. So it's got great animation. It's very much the way, like, Trolls World Tour was top-notch animation. It looked great. The animation in this looks fantastic. And it gives that origin of how Scooby and Shaggy met. And it's about Scooby and Shaggy meeting and then how they meet Velma and Fred and Daphne. And they've got mostly new people voicing them. I like Amanda Seyfried does Daphne, and Gina Rodriguez does Velma. Fred's done by Zac Efron, and Shaggy's done by Will Forte, while Scooby, I think, is still done by Frank Welker, who's always done him, only he doesn't do Fred in this one. But overall, it's a great reboot to the story, because I think it makes a really good balance between what kids are going to like nowadays. You know, it's a kid's movie. It's colorful and slapsticky, and it has jokes that they'll understand. But it also has a little wink and nods to the nostalgia aspect. If you grew up in the 70s watching these cartoons, you'll get it. You'll see all the references. They even, like, redo the opening sequence with it in CGI, but it's all the same shots that we're used to. Like, you know, when you see the diver coming out of the boat and you see the metal man that Scooby-Doo runs into in the Scooby-Doo song. And that's a lot of fun. One of the things it doesn't do is it doesn't tell a routine story. And that's important, because when you have a feature-length film, you can't just have a good old-fashioned Scooby-Doo story. You can't just have some developer trying to scare kids out of a haunted house. And it explains that away by saying, well, that's what they do. And then they ran into this new adventure, because they figured that out when they did the live action Scooby-Doo movies 20 years ago. They said, oh, well, yeah, we need to get them out of the standard setup. And even in Scooby-Doo Monsters Unleashed, they made it an actual real honest to God monsters come to life in that movie. So this one has actual supernatural elements to it, which makes it work. But the other thing it does, which I find fantastic and really clicked with me, was they bring in a lot of old Hanna-Barbera characters. Obviously, you've seen in the trailer, they got the Falcon and Dino-Mutt. I remember Dino-Mutt from way back when. And I mean, they have references to, like, Hong Kong Phooey at one point is on a poster or something. Dick Dastardly is the bad guy, and he's from Wacky Races. And you've got other cameos from the Hanna-Barbera universe, so they exist. Everybody exists together. And if you've ever watched as a kid, watch Laugh Olympics or Wacky Races or something like that, you're like, oh yeah, that reminds me of what it was like. They always did these crossovers with these characters, and that's what made them fun. And I had a blast watching it. It has the action and the humor. It's a great sort of escape from all the nonsense happening, which is basically what I said about the Trolls movie. I love kids' movies and I love animated films, and doggone it, if this one didn't work, I thought it was quite a movie and a lot of fun, and I'm going to say it totally rocks.
It rocks.
Excellent!
You're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. Let's talk about Kimmy versus the Reverend. This is the follow-up to the fourth season of The Unbreakable Kimmy Schmidt. While planning for her wedding to a prince, Kimmy Schmidt confronts the Reverend, who has another batch of girls hidden in an underground bunker.
I found an old library book that was checked out 5 years after I got taken.
Maybe there was another girl we didn't know about?
Do you really think so?
Okay, bye.
Kimmy.
Where'd you get that?
There is another girl.
Well, girls, plural.
There's another bunker.
I have to get to those girls.
What, Kimmy? Your wedding is in 3 days.
This is a pickle. How do we choose?
Maybe you can help us.
That's it. Titus, you're a genius.
I know.
One of the catches to this, it's not just a movie to follow up a TV show that ran for 4 seasons on Netflix. And I actually didn't finish the series. I think I'm somewhere in season 3. I got to admit, while I think the character of Kimmy's fun, I'm not a fan of the character Jacqueline. She just really gets on my nerves. Same thing with her daughter in that movie. They just get on my nerves. And I think Titus is very funny. I think Kim is very funny, but you know, I get annoyed with the other characters. It's not something I can binge watch. And the other reason I kind of steered away from Kimmy Schmidt as a show is it gets weirdly dark at times, because the whole premise is she's kidnapped in this doomsday cult, and they actually address the fact that she probably has PTSD, and you then have to wonder why she has PTSD, and your mind can take you to a very reasonable explanation as to why that's happened, and it gets dark. And what's funny is this movie addresses a lot of those things, and boy, does this movie get dark at times. But it's framed in such a weird way because they put it together like a choose your own adventure book, because the part of the storyline is Kimmy finds this book in her backpack that is a choose your own adventure book, but it leads her to these clues to find out that the Reverend, you know, had other girls in another bunker. And what makes it work is they use the branching technology that they used when they did the Black Mirror episode Bandersnatch, which was a standalone movie that you got to choose your own adventure to. Now that one was a very serious sci-fi speculative fiction piece. This is a whimsical, silly romp through the Kimmy Schmidt universe. But it's something different. And I'll tell you right now, even if things are opening up or not, there's a lot of people who are still going to err on the side of caution and still stay home throughout the weekend and the weeks. This is something that's different. And what's great about it is, like anything, you can follow these adventures and go down so many different paths. The movie, I think, is about an hour and a half if you go the right way, if you make all the right choices. But it's going to take you another 45 minutes or more to go back and see where you could have changed your choices and it could have gone in different paths and could have, you know, got different ideas throughout. And that's kind of fun. That's what I like about it. And I remember that's one of the reasons I like Bandersnatch. Isn't necessarily because the one story I got to the end of worked for me. It was watching all the other parallel universes of Bandersnatch evolve into multiple different storylines. And it's the same thing with Kimmy Schmidt. Now, like I said, it gets dark, because if you've ever read those choose your own adventure books, people get killed all the time. And it's not uncommon for you to get to a point in those choose your own adventure where it says, oh, and you got killed. You want to go back to page 72 and make another choice? And so there's moments like that. And it's funny, there's another critic I know, and she said she happened to choose all the right paths to get to the end, but she went back and looked at all the other options. And I said, oh, no, I killed so many characters in this multiple times. Some of these characters died on my watch multiple times because I just made bad choices for them, which is kind of an allegory for my life, I guess. And these things are fun to do if you watch as a group and then have to vote on what the choice is and then find out where it goes. So this one's a lot of fun, and I actually liked it better than the show itself. So I'm going to have to say it totally rocks.
It rocks.
Excellent.
That's it for this segment. I need to go to a break. When I come back, I'm going to be talking about a little bit of box office and the home cinema roundup featuring The Curse of the Werewolf and The Do-Over.
Unbreakable. Stay alive.
Welcome back to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. Let's talk a little bit about the box office. There is some interesting box office stuff happening because theaters haven't opened, but drive-in theaters have. The Wretched, which I talked about a couple weeks ago, is a horror movie from IFC, is actually topping the box office now. It's the number one U.S. release for 2 weeks in a row, and that's because of drive-in theaters. Now, let's put that in perspective. On its opening weekend at the drive-in, The Wretched made about $66,000. And then the next weekend, it made about $70,000, which is great for this movie and it being in these drive-in theaters. It's great that people are going to see them. It's great that people are experiencing drive-ins again. But for those who are asking, are drive-ins going to come back and be the powerhouses that they were in the 70s? Sadly, I have to say no, because the total box office for those weekends were less than $100,000 both weekends. Right around the end of March and throughout April, the box office floated between $3,000 and $5,000, because I think there were just a handful of theaters. There's like a theater opened in like Arizona or something like that, and it was an independent theater that showed one movie. So it really only made a couple thousand dollars, and then the box office started to ramp up with drive-ins. But even then, you're looking at a total box office of $100,000. That's nothing compared to what, you know, February of $100 million for the box office weekend. That shows that movies aren't making much money. Even the drive-ins, even though people are going to them, even though it's great for a movie like The Wretched, the drive-ins are not going to save the day, unfortunately. Still, go to the drive-ins, enjoy yourself. The drive-ins are almost exclusively run by private businesses. They're small, basically small businesses, independently run. Go, enjoy yourself, patronize a business, put money back into the community. I think that's wonderful. Do not expect this to fix movies in the future, though. You're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. That sound means it's time to roll into the home cinema roundup. The first one I want to hit is The Do-Over. And the reason I'm talking about this, I know the movie's like 4 years old. But in this time of quarantine, in this time of shelter in place and stay-at-home orders, you know, some people go a little mad. And it's good to reach out to people you know, especially if it's somebody who's really isolated. I got a friend, he's a critic. He's been on the show before, Ed Douglas. He writes The Weekend Warrior, and he lives in New York. And, you know, New York's not having a great time. And, you know, it's New York, so even a nice apartment is not very big. And he's sort of stuck there. He can't go anywhere. So I said, hey, let's just get on Skype and we'll watch a movie together. And he's like, oh, what do you want to watch? And, you know, because he has access to some of these newer films. I go, no, let's watch something terrible. Let's watch something that we can goof around and joke about. But I said, so let's watch something on Netflix. Let's watch one of those Adam Sandler movies. Because Adam Sandler's made like 6 movies on Netflix. And some of them are okay. Like that murder mystery movie a year or two ago was fine. The Ridiculous 6 is better than you think it would be. So he's like, let's do The Do-Over. And so we decided, let's sit there and watch it together. In the movie, Adam Sandler and David Spade star as high school buddies who, as adults, fake their deaths and assume the identities of 2 international drug dealers.
My life sucks. My car's a piece of crap. I manage a bank inside of a grocery store. My marriage is failing. That's my wife, her ex, their kids, my pool.
Wish I could start from scratch.
Enter Max Kessler.
I haven't seen you in forever.
Why do we ever stop hanging out?
I don't know.
What's going on?
I did it.
I made your wish come true. You could start from scratch.
Wait, what?
I faked our deaths.
Okay, here's the thing with Adam Sandler movies. Most of the time, his movies are loosely put together and really just an excuse for him and his buddies to take a vacation to a really nice place. And that's exactly what happens in this. I mean, the movie starts off in sort of a humdrum suburb where these guys reconnect after their high school reunion. And then very soon they end up on a yacht in like Florida somewhere. And they're going to international locations and staying in palatial estates and traveling internationally. And it's absurd and silly. And it's written with as much care as a Cheech and Chong movie. What's weird is there are moments that are genuinely funny. Adam Sandler and David Spade have chemistry together, and they are funny together, and they have timing and chemistry. And there's parts that I'm like, gosh, that really worked. That was kind of a funny bit. And some of those funny bits were crass and gross or R-rated. But then there are parts that are just awful, that you just sit there and watch and you go, oh, they just had no way. This was the best idea they could come up with to get out of this scene. And those are excruciating to watch. And then you're back and watching an Adam Sandler movie like Grown Ups. But I gotta say, The Do-Over, for as bad as some of it is, and as poorly put together, because at times it's like, they're like, let's do this sort of international heist type movie. Oh, but also let's just make these guys two idiots making boob jokes. It's this weird mix of the two, and they sometimes forget while they're doing one thing, they got to do the other thing. It's not well put together, but I'll tell you, it'll take your mind off the crap that's going on outside your house. And that might be a good thing. It's funny because afterwards, when Ed and I were talking, he's like, well, you didn't hate it. It was a decent experience because you get your mind off of sitting in your own apartment, you know, not being able to go anywhere. And that was kind of fun. So it was enjoyable doing it with Ed. We might do it again. We might do another terrible Adam Sandler movie just to make the good times roll again. But I'm going to have to say still the do-over totally sucks.
It sucks.
You're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. Let's continue on with the Home Cinema Roundup featuring The Curse of the Werewolf. This is from Shout Factory. And it was actually supposed to come out in late April, but there was a disruption in their ability to send the product to reviewers. So I didn't get this until just this week. So I wanted to make sure to cover it because, you know, God bless them for sending it out. You know, even in a pandemic, they're still pumping out their own movies, both in, well, in on demand and on Blu-ray. In The Curse of the Werewolf, Oliver Reed stars in this Hammer production of a man growing up with a curse on his life, turning him into a werewolf.
The curse of the werewolf that was laid on a baby who grew into a man possessed by a monster. To this Spanish town, the night brought drinking and dancing, music and girls, and the moon. The full moon. That turned an innocent man into a savage beast.
I am a big fan of the Hammer films. And the reason I'm a big fan of the Hammer films is I'm a big fan of the old Universal Monster movies. Because in the 50s and into the 60s, the Hammer films tried to basically forge their own path with their own versions of these Universal Monster movies. They had Dracula movies, Frankenstein movies, and Mummy movies with Christopher Lee also playing that, and they had Peter Cushing in there. This is their werewolf movie. This was their version of the Wolfman, although it's a completely different story. And what's interesting is a lot of these earlier werewolf movies, like we're talking like pre-1970, they end up getting werewolf powers in different ways. Obviously, in the original Wolfman, he's bitten by a werewolf. But in the original Universal movie, Werewolf of London, he just becomes a werewolf by being exposed to wolfsbane. And in this movie, Oliver Reed plays a guy who was born of a sexual assault and in a cursed situation. And one of the subtexts of this movie is nasty stuff begats other nasty stuff. And it all just kind of compounds on this guy who's otherwise a nice guy, but he's saddled with this curse of abuse that goes through his bloodline, and that's what makes him into a werewolf. That's the curse, and that's, I think, an interesting perspective. Now, like most Hammer movies, it's essentially a period piece, so you get all these lavish costumes, and it's shot in this one, it takes place in Spain, and you've got castles and royalty and, of course, dungeons and angry villagers. And it takes some time to get to the werewolfing after a while, because actually Oliver Reed doesn't show up until halfway through the movie because they give the whole backstory. But when it does get to the werewolfing, it's pretty violent, especially for a movie from 1961. And in fact, this movie struggled with the censors back in the UK when it came out. And even though now you'd watch it and you're like, this is something you can play, you know, on the Cartoon Network almost. But it's a neat little movie. It's an hour and a half, so it's a relatively short one. And it's a great alternative take on the werewolf legend. Now, the Blu-ray looks fantastic, and it comes with a bunch of new special features. But it's a lot of fun. If you like the Hammer movies, this is something you got to have with your set. It's not Peter Cushing and Christopher Lee, but it's certainly worthy of them. I'm going to say The Curse of the Werewolf Blu-ray totally rocks.
It rocks.
Excellent!
And that's it for this week. Next week, I'm going to be talking about The Lovebirds and The Trip to Greece. And until then, have a fat time at the movies or at home.